Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back, 12 after. That's a special music there for our guest this hour, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are things going?
Oh, I mean, you're asking if they're jiggy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're pretty jiggy here.
I can see that. Yeah. If of all the places that I could think of that's jiggy, Washington, D.C. would definitely be jiggy.
Well, you know, Congress is sort of closing in on the end of its session, so we're all looking forward to getting them out of town.
What do you figure? We're a week away from being safe?
Well, the rumor is that they're trying to get out by Veterans Day.
Okay.
Which would be a couple more weeks. I don't know if they're going to make it. They might.
That's almost, you're exactly right. It's almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, certainly by Thanksgiving, but we think it'll be before Thanksgiving. They won't be there
surely,
that long.
Surely not.
Yeah. Well, they've done it before.
I always feel much safer when Congress has disbanded.
I'm sure we all do.
Yeah. You know, when they gaggle together, that's when they're the most dangerous. They're dangerous.
Right.
They're more dangerous in packs, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah, no question. Joan, let's get into the letter. One of the things that, actually, the main thing that was high on your list this week at the Kiplinger Editors was energy. Tell us about what's going on.
Well, and that's kind of why I made the remark about Congress, because one of the main things they're trying to get done before they leave, you know, just like a bunch of college kids who are studying for their final exam
cramming
the night before the exam, is to pass major energy legislation. Now, this bill has been kicking around for quite a while, and I think there came a point where we kind of figured it wasn't going anywhere, but then you had the blackout, the big blackout on the East Coast, and I think it was August, and that really kind of focused people's attention on energy and really pushed this bill along.
So you're saying basically that Congress is a total reactionary organization, is that what you're saying?
Now, where did you get that idea from what I just said?
Well, because maybe might have been tempered by the fact that that's what I believe.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is they're reactionary. Things have to be at a crisis point before they react generally.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll get into the details of the bill.
Yeah. Where are we stuck, though, Joan? I mean, this thing has been, how long have we been working on an energy bill? About 20, 30 years?
Well, the current sticking point has to do with the tax incentives.
Yeah.
The chairman of the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee don't agree on what the incentives should be. And it's sort of interesting because on the Republican side, some of the other congressional leaders are at the point now where they just like to take these two men and throw them in a room and lock the door and not let them out till they
bang
their heads
until
they're done.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it's a very complex issue, isn't it? I mean, we got petroleum, we've got natural gas, we got electricity, probably got some coal blended in there somewhere. You know, we're the Saudi Arabia of coal, you know, in this country. We got lots of that
right.
Stuff. It's not all good coal, but it's really a complicated issue, isn't it?
Well, like you say, it's complicated in part because you're talking about different types of energy. I find it complicated particularly from the standpoint of electricity and how electricity is delivered and generated and how you can get it, and that's one of the key parts of this bill.
Is this going to be a watershed part of the bill? I mean, the transit, the delivery of electricity, that's going to be a major component, as you say. Is this going to be kind of a watershed type of a component, I should say?
Well, yeah, we're saying not only smoother delivery of electricity, but hopefully in the end, because hopefully that more market forces will be unleashed, you'll end up with lower power costs. But I wouldn't expect to see that in your next power bill or anything like that. It's going to take a while.
Now, without saying it, you're sort of hinting at deregulation, aren't you? Am I reading too much into that? It sounds a little bit like that.
Well, exactly. I think there's a bit of a deregulatory tone in this bill. That's right.
I mean, more market based is a euphemism for deregulation, isn't it?
Right. Well, the thing is, what they're trying to do is get the utilities to pay the cost of building power transmission lines and then pass on the cost that way. Mm-hmm. Although by spreading things out, there should be sort of there shouldn't be any burden on any one user, so that costs would ultimately drop, because we need more power generation in this country. That's one of the big problems,
mm-hmm.
that you don't have enough power generation.
And when you say power, obviously you're talking electricity. And
yes.
And the thing is that one of the problems is that no utility wants to go out and spend billions of dollars building infrastructure if the government's going to come in and allow some marketing company in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, transport their power and take a customer away from them over the lines that they've just invested in.
Exactly. We have old generating facilities that need to be upgraded and replaced, and it's not happening. That's a little bit scary.
And it's the same thing with telecom, too, Joan, isn't it? I mean, we've got these they're called stranded costs, and they're
right.
the things that the major distributors, they create the backbone of these systems, and until we figure out how to compensate them fairly for the use of that, I mean, they're in business, aren't they, Joan? I mean, they're going to be more likely to go along with a market-based system, as you guys point out, if they're going to be compensated for the not only their investment but their risk.
Oh, no question about it. That's a good point.
So I'm glad to see that they're, you know, we've been kidding them a good bit this morning, Joan, but I'm glad to see that Congress is focusing on that, and hopefully something more market-based will come out of that. So I'm anxious to see how that looks. Also, another thing is there seems to be some green lighting of new pipeline activity in Alaska. Tell us about that.
Well, and that I would hope that that'll generate some lower prices too. No pun intended, but. This natural gas pipeline would come from Alaska to the lower 48 states.
Mm-hmm.
And as we say, you know, demand has grown so much that we really need this additional capacity to feed that demand.
Now, have you heard anything about whether this is going to be connected with Russia? You know, Russia's got lots of natural gas. And so is it going to come across the Bering Strait in any way? Could we possibly be looking at towards a connection over there?
I don't see why we couldn't. I don't know that that's on the drawing board yet, though. I don't think that's part of this bill.
Yeah, I see. Well, and you know, Joan, another thing that this pipeline will help, it will help the electricity generation. Because, as you know, many factories in America have a dual system, a parallel system of electricity and natural gas for their manufacturing.
And they switch back and forth depending on the pricing.
That's exactly right. And they can switch back almost daily. So more natural gas, maybe that'll take a little pressure off the electricity. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with Kiplinger Editors. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter, what the Kiplinger editors have to say about what's going on in our world. And, Joan, we were just talking about Alaska and getting looks like maybe the green light for a new Alaska pipeline to carry natural gas to the lower 48 states, which is good. But now this seems a little bit paradoxical to me. It's okay to build an Alaska pipeline to carry natural gas, but apparently the drilling in ANWR, the Alaska, Alaska Natural Resources something or other, what is it? I forgot the name.
ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge.
That thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But drilling there is not okay. So apparently that's not going to fly in this bill, right?
No, that's sort of interesting because I think the conventional wisdom when President Bush was elected with the and then you had the House with a Republican majority, and the Senate now has a Republican majority. The idea was, well, drilling in ANWR should be a slam dunk now.
Absolutely.
They should be able to get that passed. But
yep.
It turns out it is not. The environmentalists, for some reason, still have enough clout that they've been able to get that blocked. So
that's
not going to be a part of this bill.
The Bambi lobby has prevailed again, haven't they?
Yeah. I'm not calling it that. That's your word for it.
The Bambi thumper lobby has prevailed again, Joe. but seriously, here, don't you think it's ironic, though, that, I mean, and paradoxical to see to see those two things together, that the pipeline is okay but the drilling is not?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to find out where the pipeline is going. You know, you're talking about a wildlife refuge that you're not allowing drilling in. So
yeah.
I don't know the particulars of it.
They're going to clean it up. They're going to clean up their mess. It'll just, you know, once they get it drilled and then it's cleaned up, it'll look like your living room, Joan.
Yeah. Sure. And the check's in the mail, and I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you.
Renewable power is a big deal, and this is an area that the Democrats are really split with the Republicans, aren't they? Because the Republicans want more new exploration, more new drilling, and the Democrats want more conservation and more renewable stuff, like I guess maybe like fuel cells and that sort of thing, right? Isn't that where they're stuck a lot?
I think so, yeah. And now this bill is going to stipulate a minimum of 10% energy from renewables by 2010, but what I'm not sure about is how they go about enforcing that, how they measure that, and how big is 10% a lot or not. Sounds like it's a lot, but they would have the next 7 years to get to that point.
And let's define renewable. Is that solar and wind and
well, see, that was my next question, is what is defined as renewable? And
now, you, Joan, I asked the questions here.
I
asked the questions. You have the answers. So what is it?
I have no idea.
What, Joan, why do you think you're on this show? You're supposed to know this stuff.
Oh, I thought I was just here to chat.
I'll tell you what,
I'll find out and get back to you.
Well, seriously, I think we're talking about the likely suspects.
Absolutely.
Are solar and wind.
Solar's obvious. Wind.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
But then you got, you know, have you ever seen one of those windmills? You know, I was talking to some people in Virginia, in a magnificent, beautiful part of Western Virginia, back in the spring, Joan, and some people were wanting to put windmills up on their ridges. I mean, that would be like, talk about grotesque.
Right.
So as much as I would like to have renewable energy, I don't want a windmill up on those beautiful mountains.
Well, that's true.
So you got to put them out there where nobody's looking, where nobody's enjoying the scenery
right.
or something. And I don't know where
right.
that is, because there's always somebody looking around.
Yeah.
But the fuel cell thing has some promise, I think. You guys have reported that many times.
Well, that's true. I think that's the way they're going to go.
Joan, here's another figure, and I'm glad you guys. Repeated this again in this letter like you did before, and that is the difference between our dependence today, folks. This is an important number, a couple of numbers that I want you to know about. Today, 62%, according to Kiplinger, of our consumption of petroleum comes from overseas, from imports. Now, Joan, tell us what it's going to be in 2025.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
Okay, 75%?
It's going to go up.
Boy.
What is that? 20%.
I can't do the math. You're the math guy.
It's going to go up 20% in the next 20 years. And you know, Joan, that I remember when you guys reported that about 6 or 8 months ago, and that just boggled my mind to think that we're getting worse off. We're becoming more dependent after all these years on foreign oil than we have been. And that really does, you know, as someone who's not exactly – you know, part of the Bambi Thumper lobby, that does shock me and disappoint
me.
Yeah,
and whatever happened, I guess nobody remembers the oil crisis of the late 70s, where we were in
mid-70s,
long lines to buy gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, but you know, Joan, even regardless of that threat, that's pretty, I mean, that's going, you know, we've talked about not liking the number, but liking the trend. That's a situation where we got a double jeopardy.
We don't like this trend.
We don't like the number or the trend.
Right.
And so I can see that number, if that number is true, I can see the need for somebody saying, you know what, we got to figure something else out. We got to do something else. And
that's right.
And it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Okay, when we come back, we're going to take a break in just a few seconds. When we come back, Joan's going to give us a report on the tax deduction, or the mileage deduction, I should say, for miles for next year. She's also going to talk to us a little bit about whether your Social Security wage base is going up. You want a hint? Yes. And then we got some other things to talk about right after these messages. 29 after, Joan Pride is our guest, and Joe Cocker will take us out. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. We'll be right back.
listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's a lady who always does everything I say. Right, Joan?
Excuse me, what?
800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is with the Kiplinger Editors. As I said, they got a website, too. It's Kiplinger, KIPLINGER.com. Lots of good stuff there that's free, and you can also, and I recommend that you check out their subscriptions, which they have a weekly flagship letter, which is called the Kiplinger Letter, now in its 81st year, and it's available, comes out every week by email or by print. I get it both ways. And they also have three biweekly letters, a tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter, and they also have a magazine. Right, Joan?
Right, and it's on newsstands. You can buy it. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, and what's that phone number, Joan? For
our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
But they can also subscribe online, can't they?
Sure can, and we still got that Jim Blassingame free trial.
Yeah, that 30-day free trial. I worked hard. I negotiated hard for that one, folks, and to be able to be sure to take advantage of that when you get a chance. Joan, before we get back to the letter, speaking of the California letter, how's that going to, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. I feel so sorry. It's a tragedy.
One thing after another with
Southern
that state.
California out there,
no, first
it?
They elect Governor Schwarzenegger, and then they have these terrible fires.
Oh, are you trying to tie the two together there, Joan?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All these bad things happening in California. No, but the fire situation is still very, very serious. And as you know,
tragedy.
And it's interesting because they name the fires so you know where they are.
Right.
But apparently over the past week or two, I guess, Santa Ana winds had kicked up. And that made everything worse. Now, the winds are beginning to die down and shift, but they're waiting to see what the shift means. The shift means that the fires could become more controllable, or they could go off in a whole new direction and destroy more homes and kill people. I mean, people are dying in their cars because they can't get away fast enough.
Well, you know, I was wondering why people were dying, because I'm thinking, well, we know about the fires. Why don't they know about the fires? But apparently, some of these fires are moving up so quick. I saw one lady on television say that she was pregnant, and she said that her neighbor said, get out of your house now. Come with us now. And she literally ran out of the house without anything and barely got out with her life.
Well, and the other thing, too, though, I think people wait too long. You know, the fires they may think the fires are a day or two away, and the fire moves quicker than they expected, and then it's right upon them.
Well, see, that's the problem with fire in that part of the country. As you know, Joan, there's not a lot of forest out there.
Right.
It's brush, basically.
Right.
And the humidity's been like down around near zero, and so it's like a tinderbox out there. So when a brush fire catches on, the winds whip it up, as you say, it can literally move very, very fast.
Right. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's really sad. It's a horrible thing, and I hope they get that under control out there. Joan, let's move back and talk about taxes. You guys report that our mileage base for our deduction for next year is going to be up a little bit?
Right. Good news. It's going up a penny and a half. So that means it will be up to 37.5 cents a mile.
And presumably that'll be all year in 2004?
I think so, yes.
Haven't they adjusted that mid-year before? Haven't they done that? Like when
and they got so much flack for that. That drove employers nuts. That was so hard to deal with when they did that. I think they've learned their lesson.
I wouldn't say that, John. I think you're going
a little
too far there. Also, what about the wage base for Social Security? What's happening with that?
Well, this is interesting. Yes, it's going up, but not by a whole lot. The increase in the wage base will be $900 next year, bringing it to $87,900. And we're saying that that's the smallest jump in over 10 years.
Well, and for big city editors, I mean, that's, you know, that's news because, you know, that means that you got to pay more than you had to pay before, right, Joan? But for small business owners, this doesn't mean anything to us because we're always way under that number.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm concerned, but what can you do?
Okay, let's move on down and talk about the states. They're really feeling the pain, aren't they, Joan, right now, for a lot of reasons.
Well, and we're saying that 2004, even though the economy will be stronger, the states won't be really seeing any relief until 2005, probably.
Well, and they've got major problems. As you know, many states, they've tried to raise taxes in several states, and the voters basically just slam-dunked them and said,
right.
You know what, you know, you're not going to do that. And so they're having to go back to the drawing board. And you know what, Joan? Many
what?
Of them are having to live within their means. Imagine that. Who would have thought of such a thing?
Well, the federal government doesn't.
I got no sympathy for the states who overspent like drunken sailors in the 90s. Now they're having to pay for their excesses, and I think they ought to have to do that. These legislators in those states, the governors, too. Tony Taylor, stay with us. We'll be back at 17 till on Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Let me remind you, Beverly Inman Ebel is going to be with us coming up in the show straight ahead, and also Doug Stives, our resident most scary CPA, our scariest CPA. We got the absolute scariest one we could find to be with us on the Halloween. So that's coming up in the show straight ahead. Now, Beverly Inman Ebel is not the least bit scary. Now, Joan can be a little scary. Joan Pride.
I was waiting for that.
Can be a little scary sometimes. And, Joan, what are you going to be tomorrow? What
myself.
Are you going to dress up as? Just yourself?
Just myself. That's
with
scary
your broom,
enough, isn't it?
With your broom, your own broom?
Oh. That was mean.
I know. You're right. I take it back.
Now you don't.
But, Joan, you can't set me up for those like that. Joan. We're talking about the states and what they're doing, and I think you had a couple of thoughts on my comment, my ranting about.
Okay, you
states.
Had your comment. You're not going to get to say it again.
Okay, go ahead.
My comment is, I'll briefly summarize. Your comment was that states have been running around spending like drunken sailors, and they need to sort of rein themselves in and be more responsible.
Well said.
However, then that may be true, but I think they also have a problem, and it's called unfunded federal mandates. And the unfunded federal mandates you watch are going to increase, not decrease, because the federal government doesn't have a whole lot of money to throw around, and they need to live within their means. So I don't think it's really fair that they keep saddling the states with unfunded federal mandates
and
say, you have to do this, but you figure out how to finance it.
And, Joan, you know what?
What?
This is going to shock you, but I agree
Uh-oh.
With you.
What? Excuse
I agree
me?
With
Hello?
You. I don't
having
like
a bad connection.
I think unfunded mandates are a mistake, too. I think that they're unfortunate, too. But you know where a lot of the unfunded mandates come from, don't you? Lawsuits by special interest groups like the Bambies and the Thumper lobby.
You had to bring those poor people back.
Like the Bambi and the Thumper lobby. That's right. All those guys. All those lawsuits. Joan, let's move over and talk about. We were talking about energy earlier. You guys report that the sale of gas electric hybrid vehicles is going to soar this decade.
Yeah, this really fits into that whole subject. Yeah, I wish your listeners could see this little neat little graphic
it's
we have
very
here.
Very impressive,
this
Joan.
Thing goes right up off the chart.
Yeah.
And this, I think this is pretty significant. We're saying by 2010, about 5% of new car sales will be hybrids. That, to me, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, and I don't know, Joan. Some of these companies have done the hybrid thing, and they're not doing it anymore. And I know some people who had a hybrid car on a lease, and they took it back. I mean, when the lease was up, they wouldn't let them buy the car.
Now, this was hybrid and not straight electric? Because
right.
I know some electric cars have been...
No, I think this was a hybrid
stopped.
Car.
Okay, well...
But anyway, it's going to be interesting. But what about the fuel cells? Are you guys not reporting about that this week?
Well, we say that the share of hybrids will depend on how fast fuel cell cars come along.
Right.
But we're not saying how fast that will be.
Boy, you know, if we could just get... You know, but you know, Joan, even if there was a silver bullet fuel cell that just popped up on the screen right now, and all cars could immediately be you know, the next all the new cars coming out could be made 100% with a fuel cell, and they were all it performed and all that kind of thing, we've got a major petroleum infrastructure that's multifaceted in this country, don't we?
No question about it.
All the gas stations, the used cars,
right.
Our culture is used to popping into a convenience store. I mean, look at what that would do to the economy.
Yeah, that would be a strange dislocation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Joan, let's move on down and talk about politics.
Okay.
You guys say that no matter what the polls are in November 2004, the Senate will look different in 2005. What do you mean by that?
Now, I thought that you would zero right in on our choice of words here. We're talking about Senate chairmanships. We're saying that there's going to be a round of musical chairmanships. Because when you...
I didn't want to say that, John.
Nowadays, when you become the chairman or chairwoman of a committee, there's a term limit on that chairmanship. And so a lot of those limits are being reached in the next Congress, and so you'll have a lot of flipping around, which is going to be interesting, I think.
But this doesn't necessarily... You're not foretelling the change in parties in leadership. You're talking about just the leadership itself inside the same
party. Right, but when you have a change in a chairman, even if the person is from the same party, they may have a totally different set of priorities, come from a different region of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that would sort of cast a new light on the policies that that committee works on.
Right. Yeah. Other politics, Joan, is the class action tort reform, that Orrin Hatch is working on, that might get another push.
It might, but boy, that I think it's still going to be tough.
We need that. We need to. We've got to have some ammunition against the predatory trial lawyers, folks out there, Joan. They're really hurting small businesses with these class action lawsuits that don't even, many times, you know, they're out there looking for a plaintiff to go to work for.
Right, but this is a good example where Hatch is going to try to push this before his chairmanship is up, because the next chairman, who is expected to be Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, will not be as favorable toward this issue as Senator Hatch has been.
Yeah. Well,
so you can
Hatch
see where even though you're not changing parties, you're changing points of view.
Hatch is a real Republican. Mr. Specter is a so-called Republican. And I can see that would be a problem with the tort reform thing in the next go around. What about turning our employees into political allies, Joan?
This is interesting. The idea is to educate employees about the importance of pro-business policies, such as, for example, making the research and development tax credit permanent, other things like that, defense mm-hmm. procurement, and sort of trying to tie those issues together to make them real, to make employees realize that these issues are important to them and not just to the business owner.
It sounds like the employers are taking a page out of the union playbook.
Could
there,
be.
Joan.
Yeah,
how about that? Finally getting smart and playing by the same rules that the unions are playing by. Tim Till, we'll be right back with Joan Pride right after these messages. Stay with us. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's talk about some good news. 6% in the third quarter GDP. That's like a rocket, isn't it?
Yeah, and you want me to throw some cold water on that?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, we say that should be taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
We're saying that don't expect that. That's a spike and not the pace that's going to be sustained.
And you might be surprised to hear me say that I'm glad that that's a spike.
Well, yeah, because that would be an overheated economy if that continued.
We got inflation
right where we want it.
But that was a nice little bit of good news. I mean, that's as you say, that's a number that we might not like, but we like the trend.
Right. We sure needed that number, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, we don't need that. But, you know, and Joan... In the face of that, the Fed still just held rates steady and, as you know, issued a statement that for a considerable period of time, that's the new quote, Joan, you know, that's replacing irrational exuberance, considerable period, which is the term they've been arguing over.
There's been so much controversy over that term.
Right. They're going to leave the rates lower for a considerable period, way into next year, so... So that tells me, Joan, if you remember years ago, you and I talked about the need for the Fed to have a new model for how they looked at inflation. And
right.
I think they now get it, don't you?
It's taken them a while, but we think they're finally there.
Yeah. What do you guys have a prediction about the Dow?
That's right. Well, this isn't a huge prediction. We're just saying it may test now may test the $10,000 mark. So sort of like hitting that, maybe retreating and hitting it again. The question is how soon it's going to be solidly over 10,000.
Don't you think that's funny that we're talking about? Here's an industry, the stock market, the buying and selling of equities and managing of these ownerships. How sophisticated, how many models, how much metrics they've got to measure these things, and theoretically, people buy because of all these things. But then you overlay this one number, this 10,000 mark, like that's some emotional thing for us.
Oh right, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Exactly.
It just demonstrates what an emotional beast the marketplace really is, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
It's very interesting to me. All right, John, let's move down and talk about China. What's going on over in China?
Well, speaking of overheating, we're saying that China is showing signs that it is overheating. And unfortunately, we're drawing parallels between China and Japan and saying that China looks an awful lot like Japan did before it went into its long and sustained slump.
And you know one of the things that makes it look that way?
Credit.
The banking, that's right.
The banks. Yep.
They got major...
The way they extend credit.
They got major a la Japan banking situations,
yeah,
don't they?
That's true.
There was
that's
a recent article about that in the Journal, Wall Street Journal, folks, over the last week or so. That was an outstanding article, John. I don't know if you saw it or not, but he was talking about... I just don't have it in front of me, or I'd say who the author was. But he was talking about how China is not... They're doing some things that's very much like what Japan did with regard to not having good credit practices. And as you know, Joan, that's one of the reasons that Japan is still in its doldrums is because it didn't write off a bunch of bad loans when it should have.
Right. But also in China, if you've got a pulse, you can get a loan.
That's exactly right. And they're not... Joan, the figure, I think this guy... I'm so sorry I can't say his name. But he said... That maybe as much as 50% of the loans in China are bad debt.
Gee, that's huge.
That's huge. I mean, what is it locally? What is it in the U.S. where they try to be under 5%, maybe 2 or 3% or something like that?
Yeah, 10% would be a disaster.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So that's very interesting. Another thing, Joan, that was interesting, if you saw the Journal, another Wall Street Journal article about a week ago, was about the report on manufacturing worldwide. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
15 manufacturing jobs are off, I think it's 15% worldwide.
Oh, yes, I remember that article.
Including China, where all
including
the jobs
China.
Are supposed to be going.
Right.
You know what the culprit is?
Technology.
That's it.
Yeah.
Think about that. So we're all complaining over here in the United States. We don't have any manufacturing jobs. Well, folks, we need to take a chill pill and realize that this is happening all over the world, isn't it, Joan?
This is the future.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So it was a wake-up call for me, Joan, and it needs to be for a lot of people, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the last word, Joan.
Okay.
You get the last word. How about that?
Thank you, Jim.
You're pretty excited about that, aren't you?
No. It never happens.
See you next week, Joan.
Okay, Jim.
Joan Pride, folks, with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.